This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WBXU. I'm Lucy May. Ohio has been breaking economic records since April, when the state's unemployment rate dropped to 3.7% for the first time since 1976, and the jobless rate is even lower now. This is good news for many workers who are having an easier time finding jobs. But how many of those jobs are paying a living wage? And what's the impact on the state's small businesses? Joining me now to discuss how Ohio has been recovering from its early pandemic job losses and how policymakers can continue to support the growing labor market are Policy Matters Ohio economist Michael Shields. Thanks for being here, Michael.
Glad to be here.
And Buckeye Institute research fellow Greg Lawson. Welcome back, Greg.
Thank you very much for having me be on.
Do you have questions or comments? You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at wbxu.org. Michael, as I mentioned, Ohio's unemployment rate has been dropping and breaking records since April, at least until this last month when it went just up a little bit. Walk us through what's been happening there and why.
Sure. We've got a really tight labor market right now, with strong demand for workers, at least statewide. That's actually the job market that we really need in this moment. We have some caveats in there because the job recovery hasn't yet reached all Ohio communities. Four metro areas have recovered all of the jobs that they lost to COVID-19 compared to where they were in February of 2020. But seven of our MSAs still haven't fully recovered. We have reached a record low unemployment rate, but there is a caveat in there as well. Our unemployment rate right now at 3.4%, but we're still missing almost 100,000 people from our workforce who never came back after the pandemic. So, you know, if those folks were in the job market, we'd be closer to 5%. It's still very good news. We've still got about almost two jobs available for every active job seeker who's out of work right now. So that's great. And this is something that we really need to hang on to as long as we can, because what we're starting to see is people are able to bargain for better wages, particularly folks at the bottom of the pay ladder have had some success in achieving real wage growth. That's wage growth that exceeds the rate of inflation. And that's something that we really need. You know, working people in Ohio are more productive than they have ever been before in history. But over the last several decades, over four decades, productivity per worker rose by 76%. That's every worker is making about 76% more than their counterpart did four decades ago. But wages for the middle earning Ohioan have only risen 4% over that time. So we've got some good stuff going on in our labor market right now. We need to keep that going as long as we possibly can.
And who or what, Michael, do you think should get credit for this good stuff? What's the reason we're having this good stuff happening, where we do have good stuff happening?
You know, I think this draws a really strong contrast to the slow recovery that we had from the Great Recession. You know, that we saw a lot of spending cuts from the government, particularly at the federal level. In response to that recession, it was it took a really long time to get the jobs back that we had lost to that in Ohio, depending on where you date the business cycle, because we actually started to see job losses before we were officially in recession. It took between 7 and 9 years to get all of those jobs back. We still, not until this past month, it was this August when we finally reached the highest number of jobs we've ever had in Ohio, but that's especially remarkable because the previous job peak that we had was way back in May of 2000. We lost jobs to the early 2000s recession. We never, ever got them back, not through the Great Recession, not until this past month in August did we finally recover those jobs. And I think the difference is that the response to the COVID-19 pandemic and the recession that it caused was really scaled this time to the size of the crisis. You know, the Congress pushed money out to people who were unemployed and who needed it the most. That included enhanced unemployment benefits. It included benefits that went to people who were excluded under their state's system. We've got some 800,000 Ohioans who are working in Ohio today who mostly because of low pay, some because they have limited work hours. If they were to lose their jobs tomorrow, they would not qualify for unemployment benefits. So at least for a short window of time, Congress said, we're not going to do this. We're going to make sure that people are able to get through this okay. They spent money on individuals who were out of work, on families, on businesses, on state and local governments, and really directed that to where it was most needed. And I think that this is really a remarkable contrast. We've recovered these jobs back in less than 3 years. And it's a stark contrast with what we have done before when we've let our job markets and the people who live in our communities really languish and struggle without the policy response that we have needed in the past. So really remarkable triumph for good public policy, in my view.
Greg, what do you think? What do you see as the reasons behind Ohio's hot economy right now?
Sure. Well, first of all, I think a lot of what Mike was saying has a lot of truth to it. I think we're in a very good situation. We have one of the best unemployment rates we've ever had. I do think the caveat that he raised is critically important, and that is that we have less people in the overall labor force. If they're not in the labor force, they don't actually count in the official unemployment rate. And so when you see the unemployment rate being probably closer to 5% if some of those folks were back in the labor force, that is a cause for some concern. So, you know, I think there's definitely some sunshine out there on the horizon. But this is definitely something that we need to be very careful about. Ohio is an interesting state. We're a grayer state, demographically speaking. So some of those folks that are dropping out of the labor force are no doubt dropping out of the labor force because they're older. And in particular, COVID, shut things down for a period of time. And while Ohio, I think the governor, you know, deserves credit for getting things open more quickly in Ohio than some other states, which I think is actually a beneficial thing that has had some long-term impacts on why Ohio has been able to recover some of those jobs more quickly as well. Some people have dropped out that won't be back in, and that is going to be a problem. And how do you bring some of those folks in? Hopefully, at least maybe not the older ones, but certainly anybody that's younger, and bring them in. So one thing I will say that I'm a little worried about is a lot of the smaller sized businesses struggled a lot through COVID, and not all of them have come back. So a lot of Main Street businesses have really taken it on the chin, and they are the kind of folks that don't necessarily get to come back because they're not bigger corporations with a lot of capital at their disposal. So, Ohio has not necessarily come fully back when you factor those kind of businesses in. What we have done very well and have been very fortunate at is Central Ohio in particular is doing extremely well. It's becoming a magnet for massive investment, in particular, a lot of tech investment. Obviously, there's the Intel plant that's coming into Ohio to build semiconductor chips. That's the biggest single economic development project, I believe, in Ohio history. You have Honda is now developing more electric vehicle production of batteries for electric vehicles. You know, you just saw there's a lot of cloud computing going on, a lot of big tech companies. That's starting to reverberate out. You know, we just got good news yesterday that we're going to have a major avionics a company making investments out in Dayton near Wright Pad Air Force Base that I think is going to be very helpful and create up to 2,000 jobs for these air taxis. So I think tech and Ohio trying to shift and focus on tech situations and leverage some of the advantages with the educated workforce that we have has actually been very beneficial. Plus, frankly, you know, the supply chain disruptions of COVID woke people up to some of the challenges with global supply chains. And there is a push to reshore a lot of stuff because of fears regarding things like geopolitical tensions and competitions with China and things like that. And Ohio has been particularly well positioned to be able to leverage that because of where we're located, the educated workforce. And also we have an incredibly sophisticated and strong logistical system here in Ohio as well. So I think those are parts of the reasons why we've been able to be very effective. One thing that is, again, while that's positive, and I don't want to be a naysayer on anything, I do need to say that a lot of this is Central Ohio. A lot of this is the Franklin County and the surrounding areas around Columbus. A lot of the rest of Ohio, Cincinnati has been fairly stable. But if you go up to Cleveland, it's not doing nearly as well. Certainly some of the other areas in the state, regionally speaking, in different regions, aren't doing as well. And in a certain sense, Central Ohio is sort of absorbing a lot of what jobs and things from other parts of the state. So it is a cautiously optimistic picture out there, but there are some definite challenges when you start to kind of look under the hood a little more deeply and you see some of the disparate impacts and where some of those jobs are and some of the people that have dropped out of the labor force. Mm-hmm.
I want to remind our listeners, we're talking about Ohio's hot economy, what it means for workers and employers, and how state policymakers can keep it going. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. Michael, what are some of the ways Ohio's economy is good for workers right now? And as part of that question, I'd like to talk about wages.
Sure. So we saw growth in wages over the last couple of years at the very bottom of the wage scale. So workers in the bottom two deciles, these are folks who make $14.94 or less, have seen wage growth that beat inflation. So they're actually doing a little bit better. That's really good news. We don't see that every year. And of course, you know, that makes our labor market a little bit more balanced, a little bit more fair. That's still not a lot of money. $14 went almost $15. We looked in, it's been a couple of years now. I think we're going to probably want to look at this question again, but we looked at who would benefit in Ohio from raising our minimum wage to $15 an hour. And we found that about 1.5 million Ohioans would benefit from that. Also, we found that we would see a lot of improvements in equity. You know, about 4 in 10 of those folks are women. Or I'm sorry, about 6 in 10 of those folks are women. Black workers are much more likely to benefit. You know, people who have for a long time really been sidelined. So we definitely need good public policies to sort of enhance what working people are starting to achieve right now. We also know that although over the long term, over the last, you know, I do a Labor Day report each year, and we look at 40 years of data. Over the long term, wages have grown across the board, but nowhere near the level of additional value that working people are creating for this state and for their employers. So the average labor productivity, this is per worker, has increased by 76% because we have more people working than we did 40 years ago. We're actually producing about double what we did at that time throughout the whole state economy. But wages for the typical worker, that's the one in the middle, have risen only 4%. So we know that our job market is not actually delivering on some of our core values on its own. When I talk about values, I mean, the American dream, right? Mm-hmm. The idea that you go to work, you do a good job, maybe you get a little extra education, and that's a way that everybody can succeed, everybody can thrive. We're not seeing our labor markets delivering that for working people. And so we need more. We need policymakers to actually, you know, actively step up and do that. You ask me what's going on right now that's good. We've got a tight labor market by some measures. We've noted we still haven't pulled everybody back in yet. I think a big part of the reason for that is because we're still experiencing childcare deserts across a majority of our states. Our state, that has gotten worse as centers have had more difficulty retaining childcare staff. That's something that we need to make sure that those folks are being paid a wage that really reflects the critical value of the work that they're doing. But we do have a pretty strong labor market by some measures, and I see that as a good thing for three main reasons. One is that the labor market right now is working the way that it's supposed to, and when I say what it's supposed to do, the job of the labor market is to match workers to the jobs where they can use their skills the best. That makes them as productive as they can possibly be, and that delivers benefits to everybody. The second reason we need a tight labor market right now is that we need that to bring in the workers who too often get left on the sidelines. In good economic times and bad, Black working people have an unemployment rate that's roughly double the rate for their white counterparts. Last year, when unemployment for white Ohioans was 3.3%, it was 7.2% for Black workers. That means when we're thinking about how do we pull in everybody, we need to be running a tight labor market. It also means that when we have a 1 point drop in our unemployment rate, that's a 2 point drop for the people who are most likely to be sidelined and the people who need that the most. And finally, we need a strong labor market like we have today, because this strong labor demand is helping working people to reclaim some of their share of the income that they have made possible through their hard work, their improved skills, and increased productivity that they just haven't been able to share in, because unfortunately, corporations and the wealthiest have managed to capture far more of their share of that growth, majority of the new wealth that has been created over the last two generations.
Okay. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about Ohio's hot economy. We're talking about what it means for workers and businesses and how state policymakers can keep it going. My guests are Policy Matters Ohio economist Michael Shields and Buckeye Institute research fellow Greg Lawson. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at wvxu.org. Greg, before the break, Michael gave us a lot to think about, a lot to talk about. When you think about wages, do you think they need to be higher so families in Ohio can be self-sufficient? He mentioned a $15 minimum wage. What are your thoughts on that as an approach to help move wages higher?
Well, I think the first thing is we certainly do think wages should be higher, but I think that the way in which people get to higher wages, I would disagree with, in the sense that I don't think a government mandate or a minimum wage mandate is the right way to go about doing it. First of all, a lot of jobs, I mentioned a lot of these tech jobs earlier because that's sort of the new thing, and a lot of new ones are coming online there. Most of those are going to be above $15 an hour anyway. A lot of the Amazon jobs, a lot of the things are happening that way. So what happens when you do government mandated minimum wage increases is it tends to hurt a lot of times the smaller businesses that aren't necessarily in some of the bigger, you know, urban or areas where there's a big manufacturing hub or a logistics hub. And you're going to hit some of the again, main street type of businesses disproportionately. And what that's going to mean is they're going to hire less people ultimately, because it's a different sort of a work environment, and it's a different situation there, and they don't have the reservoirs of capital that some of the bigger businesses that are paying those kind of wages have at their disposal. So I think that we got to be kind of mindful about that, because if you come in and say we're going to just mandate that to happen, some businesses are going to they're going to pass along costs, they're going to not hire as many people. And the other problem is going to be that some of the folks that may unfortunately be disproportionately impacted tend to be younger workers who are newer into the labor force and are working their way up and developing the kind of soft skills that they need to move up the economic ladder. And if they can't get in at maybe a below $15 an hour job, they might not get that job for a while. They may not have any job at all. And so they get hurt while, and I think that's something that gets oftentimes lost in this conversation, is what happens to those people who don't get the jobs at all. The second thing I'd say is, we need to be kind of mindful that part of the productivity gains that Mike was talking about has a lot to do with sort of the way in which capital is being deployed. We are using essentially, robots, machines. Now, all the rage is going to be AI, and make no mistake, that is going to have massive impacts on all kinds of different jobs, and it's going to probably increase productivity a great deal. And there will probably be some income gains that will happen as a result of that. But if you start mandating what has to be paid rather than letting a more market-based approach and the market work on that, you're going to end up incentivizing businesses to continue to shift away from labor and risk going more to capital. And so what does that really look like? Well, I know that there's a restaurant I take my kids to here in Columbus a lot of the time, and used to be you'd sit down, they'd come out, take your order, and do all that stuff. Well, now you literally can't get anybody to do that. It's all kiosk, and you have to go pick it up at the thing. They do still have cooks in the back, and they have one person to make sure that the register or the kiosk is working appropriately, but you literally have no interaction. They literally will not take your order because that's not what their job is. You're going to see more and more of that if you're not careful how you calibrate and resequence these wages. These wages need to be absorbed into the market, or you're going to actually create incentives to essentially automate an increasing number of jobs away And the people, again, that are going to probably be hurt more are those with less education, that are maybe struggling, or maybe they're in the process of getting a degree, you know, and they're working a job to sort of make some ends meet as they're in a community college or some kind of a workforce program. And you could really pull the rug out from underneath those people. I don't think that's the intent, but that is actually what's going to happen. And again, every time you go and order a kiosk at a McDonald's or any other fast food place, that's less people working in those places now. And that is what is going to continue to happen. So, you know, we need to be aware of that because of the unintended consequences. So I think what we have to do is we have to really focus in on the education. We need to focus in on K-12. We have, you know, a lot of learning loss as a result of the COVID school closures that has not been returned back to where it was pre-COVID. We're making some progress. There's no question about that. But that is a major hit, and that is going to have potentially a generational impact on students. And so we're going to have to continue to do high-end tutoring and make those kind of investments to get these students ready. Because at the same time we're having that kind of learning loss, we're having all these tech kind of jobs and the big growth and a lot of these new big businesses that are coming in, and you're seeing 2,000 new jobs or 1,500 new jobs. These are jobs where you're going to need different skill sets than what we've had in the past. So if we don't educate people for those jobs, that's going to be a challenge, and all the gains are going to go to people that are educated. So education is going to be a key thing. And I will say one area where I think I probably do agree with Mike has a lot to do with the childcare issue. I think the childcare issue is a definite hurdle that is causing some labor force issues, especially for women in the workforce. And it's quite frankly, probably making a lot of women have to drop out of the workforce because it doesn't make sense for them to enter if they can't have some kind of childcare. So we're going to have to, I think, navigate that. And I think the business community is going to have to put some additional resources into making sure that there's availability of childcare and making sure that people are paid adequately to be able to enter that type of job so that there's a supply that they can maintain. So I would say that that is going to be something we have to do. But education is, frankly, the cornerstone of this stuff. We're not going to be able to mandate our way with mandated wages. We're going to have to make sure that we're feeding the intellectual capital to workers so that they can be successful.
Michael, your Labor Day report that you referenced earlier does suggest including funding for quality child care to kind of keep the economy growing. What form should that take, in your view?
Well, you know, the majority of families in Ohio are not able to cover the cost of childcare without being what's called cost burdened. You know, Health and Human Services says that a family should not spend more than 7% of their overall income on childcare. That's what's considered a manageable budget. But for the middle income Ohio family, the cost of childcare for just a single infant is about twice that. So it's not just a problem for poor working people in Ohio. This is a problem for families with young children pretty much across the board. We really need to be deepening the public investments that we make into childcare. You know, this is fundamentally it's a math problem. It's costly for families to afford quality care, but it's costly for providers to provide care because fundamentally it's a labor intensive thing. You know, the most important facet of a quality program for young children in particular is to form a stable relationship with a caregiver who is who's you know going to be sort of a fixture in their life, at least while they're very young. And one of the things that we see is childcare workers have really high turnover rates. You know, they're that the industry is struggling to retain staff. People are leaving to take jobs in other industries that are not necessarily high paying, you know, in fast food, in retail. But childcare workers are among the lowest paid in the state. It's an overwhelmingly female workforce, well over 90%. And I think we really have to look at this and recognize that we are not valuing the work that childcare teachers are doing, you know, based on what it's really worth to us. This is a high skill job and it's very high stakes. You know, these are the folks who are helping us to raise our children, keep them safe during the day so that we can go to work and get them ready to go to school. We're not paying people anything close to commensurate with the value of the work that they're doing. And that's one of the reasons that we continue to have a shortage. We have to start making investments in our childcare infrastructure. We have to recognize this as a public good and a public policy issue that we have to solve for on a systems level. That needs to include not just, you know, foisting the cost of providing this care onto the people who are actually doing the work and foisting it onto them in the form of low wages that don't meet the cost of living and that leave them in a place where they struggle to provide care for their own children and their own families. You know, this is something that the only way that we can square this, because it's costly to afford for families, it's costly to provide for childcare providers. The only way that we can solve this is with deep public investments. And we need to attach strings to that to make sure that the people who are doing this work are paid a living wage. That should be something on the order of $20 an hour.
Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. There's so much more we could talk about all this. I've been talking with Policy Matters Ohio economist Michael Shields and Buckeye Institute research fellow Greg Lawson. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, we'll talk with film critic T.T. Stern-Enzi. He just got back from the Toronto International Film Festival and has a review for us. This is Cincinnati Edition.